Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. We're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We have an email here from Carol.
It says, hello, hope all is well. I would like to know what you think of Oregon and Washington no longer requiring the bar exam. So Eric gave us a link here to the Columbian. I did see this during the week. It must have had a line in the Times. I saw a list that said, Washington Supreme Court has determined that the bar exam will no longer be required to become an attorney in the state. A task force there found that it is at best minimally effective for ensuring competency. Washington is the second state to not require the bar exam following Oregon. Other states, including Minnesota, Nevada, South Dakota, and Utah, are examining alternative pathways to licensure. There will be three experiential learning alternatives to the bar exam, each for people following different paths of legal study. The specific scale and implementation plan for the pathways have yet to be developed. Looks like one of them is a six-month-long apprenticeship with supervision and guidance from a qualified attorney. That reminds me a lot of what happens in Canada. In Canada, they have articling, which is like a year of supervised practice. That does seem like it makes a hell of a lot more sense than, I mean, like the bar exam is so stupid because it's just like, oh, we're going to test you on various legal concepts that this might be the literal last time you ever look at this shit.
Yeah.
Criminal shit. If you're going to go practice transactional law or whatever, right? Yeah. Just things that you're like, huh, wills and trusts, and you're not going to be any kind of, or you're going to be a criminal attorney, but now you have to answer wills and trusts questions.
Yeah.
An internship, some kind of actual supervision seems way, way better. There's a line here that says law students can become practice ready by completing 12 qualifying skills credits and 500 hours of work as a licensed legal intern. That makes a lot more sense than just studying the law in a classroom and in a book and then taking an exam about it. It has nothing to do with legal practice. It's more like just memorization. And that shit you can look up in a book anyway.
Yeah.
So really weird that the bar exam is what the bar exam is.
I think the bar going away makes a lot of sense. So many people, the bar just becomes a bar to practicing as opposed to, like you just said, right, getting experience.
Well, there are a lot of people out there who see the bar as simple guild gatekeeping.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the lawyers themselves, which the Supreme Court of the state is in charge of the bar exam for that state. So who is the Supreme Court? Well, it's the white shoe lawyers of that state. You know, it's like the fanciest lawyers in that state with fancy law firms and fancy education and fancy networks. And they can, you know, pretend to be protecting the community. While also stifling their own competition.
Yeah.
You ever heard that before anywhere? So, you know, a lot of people are just like, hey, it's gatekeeping. The one thing that's super unfair about it, and I know this the most because I started in California, which notoriously has the hardest bar. The tragedy there is that you can get into law school. You can pay 3 years worth of law school tuition and expenses, fees and books and all that. You know, you can run into hundreds of thousands of dollars of law school debt. Then the bar exam can keep you from practicing.
Yeah,
and it does happen to a lot of people. I mean, the failure rate in the California bar, I think it has fluctuated over the years, but for a long time, it was like around 50% of people.
Oh, 50? Wow, that's wild. Yeah, maybe I had 30 in my head, but maybe that's actually Virginia. Even 30% though is a large
failure
large
rate. Large
number. Yeah, fail rate. Large number of students.
And you don't get a refund on your law school tuition. It's not like your loans get canceled if you don't practice law.
Yeah, that's really sad.
That's the big, big tragedy, right? Is that now some people do take it again a second time and pass. I think eventual bar passage in California is more like 80-85%. But yeah, there's still 10-15% of the students who get themselves to the bar exam and then never practice law because of the bar exam. But I thought that the American Bar Association was supposed to be making sure that the schools weren't admitting people who were gonna not eventually be able to practice law. I thought that was the whole point, is that if you graduate from one of these accredited institutions, I mean, I think that's what they should really end up doing, is just giving bar privilege. If you go to an ABA accredited school, the level of education should be at a high enough standard that you can automatically get licensed to practice law.
If you graduate from the institution.
If you graduate from an ABA accredited school, what's the point otherwise of the ABA accrediting schools anyway?
Yeah.
If they can, if students can just later be held back by the bar.
Yeah.
So Oregon, Washington, two of our most progressive states, not surprising that they're making this move first. I have heard similar things. Actually, isn't Wisconsin? I thought that Wisconsin never had the bar. I think there's another, I think Wisconsin also doesn't have a bar exam, but anyway. Yeah, I think this is great. This next question, I'm a little curious. Maybe there's something I'm missing in the story, but I'm not sure why this is really relevant. Carol says, is there a tool available regarding law school programs that have particularly strong legal writing programs?
Yeah. So to answer that question directly, I don't know of any tools that outline which schools have good writing programs or not. I am very curious why you want that. I do think that legal writing is a very important skill that you need to develop. And so maybe Carol's thinking, if I'm not going to take the bar, then I should be a strong legal writer ready to practice law. But that's going to be true regardless of whether you take the bar or not. So I'm not too sure.
Yeah. I guess, you know, one kind of obvious way of answering this question is that Harvard, Stanford, Yale are going to have the graduates of Harvard, Stanford, Yale are going to be the best legal writers. But that's mostly selection bias and probably doesn't have that much to do with the actual education that you're receiving there. It's just that people who crushed it in undergrad and who also crushed the LSAT and went to elite schools are going to come out the very best writers. There could be other lower ranking schools that have very strong legal writing programs. I'm going to actually give a compliment to UC Hastings. Ready to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay. UC Hastings has a really strong moot court competition team. And people might think moot court, well, that's not writing, that's oration. No.
Yeah.
Moot court is won and lost on your briefs.
Yeah.
So they have very strong legal writing programs, at least in their moot court division. Moot court competition, you're learning how to do really high level appellate briefs. And so that's one example of a particularly strong legal writing program that you might not know is a legal writing program, but that's largely what it is.
Yeah. I we're talking about legal writing, and I just have to talk about Ross Guberman. I mean, he's who I worked for before, before I started doing LSAT. He has his own legal writing program, and he's one of the best legal writing consultants in the legal industry, not just in America, but in the whole world. So if you're interested in going to law school and you're interested in legal writing, you have to check out his book. That's Point Made. And it's all about how the best attorneys in this field write. And so if you read that book and you don't find it interesting, maybe law school is not for you.
Yeah. Point Made by Ross Guberman. I mean, doubling down on that point, if you think that your life as a lawyer is not going to involve heavy, heavy reading and writing, you might want to think again. TV does not give a good impression of what lawyers actually do. Lawyering is largely solitary and it is largely paperwork. I mean, if it ain't on the brief, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and now room for a little bit of nuance there, big room actually, because if you are going to practice criminal prosecution or criminal defense, it might be a lot less about what's on the paperwork and it might be a lot more about what's going to happen in a trial. But those attorneys who actually go to trials a lot, especially early in their career, are really super rare.
Yeah.
It happens in crim because, you know, defendants accused of serious things they're either going to settle, in which case the extensive briefs and paperwork and stuff. I suppose you probably do have to write a settlement agreement and get it approved, but those are probably largely just templates anyway. But then when you go to, when you actually have a trial, then yeah, now it's a whole different beast because you've got a jury that you're actually in there convincing of things.
Yeah.
It's just that that's the majority of other lawyers, and especially the lawyers who make the big bucks, that's just not what their day to day actually looks like.
Yeah, totally. For more on Ross Guberman, you can check out our other podcast, Thinking LSAT. It was episode 416.
Awesome. Email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.